The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Now, one of the moments of radio I will always remember was when Alice Taylor spoke to Gay Byrne about her childhood in Kerry when she walked barefoot to school through the fields. It was magic listening to her conjured up a disappeared Ireland, and Alice, of course, has gone on to write many books about her life in rural Kerry and in Inishannon in County Cork. Well, we met up in her lovely garden there during the week. It's not huge, just the right size, crammed with trees and yellow and red lilies and begonias and statues that have meaning and memory and lovely wrought iron benches and tables where Alice likes to eat. I'd been expecting to meet someone like a modern day Peg Sayers, but instead I met a modern, youthful looking woman with white jeans and a t-shirt and a beautiful smile. Not at all what I expected from a woman who had run about barefoot as a child, and that's the first thing I said to Alice.
I suppose, you know, in a way, the going to school barefoot and all that, it didn't happen that long ago. It was a generation back. I think people have the perception that it happened hundreds of years ago, but it didn't. It didn't. And that's why, in a way, I wrote my first book, because I used to tell my children, you know, when they went down to the farm where I grew up, you know, that we grew up there with no running water, no bathroom, no car, no telephone. And I think they thought I was making it up. So it isn't that long ago. We have made immense strides in Ireland. Well, I don't know in what direction anyway, but we've made them anyway. Yeah, huge changes have come about. I always think, you know, Anya, when I think this picture depicts it. When we were going to school, we went across a little stone bridge, and when different families came along the valley, and each family put a stone on the bridge. So when we came to the little bridge, we knew how many were gone on ahead. And I used to think that's a stone. Years after, I said, that was a stone telephone. That was the first telephone. And now we're on the internet. We're on Skype. I mean, I think my generation are fantastic. We've made mighty strides because we grew up in a different world. But now we're into a whole different world again, you know.
And that's how you started writing, wasn't it? Because these were stories you told your children.
Yeah.
But then... They were being lost, these experiences, these stone telephones, these, you know, heading over the fields to school. Yeah. That was all being lost.
It was all being lost. And, you know, we went barefoot. And people have the idea now that you went barefoot because you couldn't afford shoes. But I'm not saying that we could afford shoes. But whether you did or you didn't, it didn't matter. We were dying to trot for shoes and socks. The first fine day, off everything went. And we didn't put them on until the cold weather came. It was just part of the tradition. It was very good for feet as well. And I love telling this, you know, and it disgusts people. We used to love jumping into hot cow dungs. And I love to see
feeling it squidge up between your toes.
And I people look so disgusted. And I think, sure, that was first of reflexology. That's where it came from. You know, that was very good for us. We were very close to the earth, I suppose, without really realising it. Because, the animals were close around us. They were our bread and butter, really. And
what would your mother say when you came in with all the cow paths between your toes?
She it was so much part of living. My mother was the most easygoing, non-judgmental person you ever met, which was just as well because my father had no patience whatsoever, and we all hopped when he said hop. So there were a great balance. But, you know, I often think back, like, when you think about it now, we have rain showers and washing machines and dishwashers. My mother had to wash everything in a tub. And the water had to be drawn in, boiled. I know there was a lot of help around, but the work... And when I think of everything was cooked over a crane, I think back on a crane, now you'd want to be an engineer.
What, the tripod thing over the open fire? Yeah.
That you'd this iron contraption, and the pots hung over the fire, and the weight of things, and you'd be able to manage it, lift them up and down, the balancing. And before you knew anything about cooking, you would be able to manage the crane. So there were... I've huge respect for the generation that went before us. My mother's people, my grandmother's. My grandmother's people, they would be in the first generation after the famine. They were amazing women. They kept the whole show on the road. They were mighty women, you know.
And I remember when I first heard you on the radio talking to Gay Byrne, and I remember it reminded me of my mother telling stories about, you know, walking barefoot to school in the summer, gathering nettles, you know, for nettle soup in the spring because it was a good tonic after the winter. And again, these are things if I told my children now, that they think it was like... gazillions of years ago,
The Dark Ages. They read. Yeah. And it's only a generation back. So it's in a way, like, it's very... When I wrote, you know, all the different books, I wanted to document it. I wanted that it would be written by somebody who had lived through it. I didn't want somebody to come on and do a thesis on us as if we were prehistoric creatures down along. I wanted somebody who had run through muddy gaps and who got, you know, picked thorns out of their toes and, you know, packed hay in the barn and drew water from the well. And I mean, the work was very, very hard. But then there was running through it, like, there was great fun. We would be spend all day saving hay in the meadow. There was six of us there and the neighbours. There was always a mehl in Ireland. And when we leave the meadow, someone would say, "Race you," and we'd all take off like a herd of calves. So that we were always competing, running, having fun together. And my brother had a boxing club. Would you believe a boxing club out in the middle of rural Ireland? And I don't know where he got boxing gloves. And all the young fellas around would gather in our barn and they'd have boxing matches. And he had a big sack hanging off the barn as a punching bag. And if there was no one around, I was the sparring partner. So I knew about light up or cuts and ducking and all sorts of things.
Among your many talents. But then in 1961, you come here as a young bride with Gabriel. You come here to Inishannon and we're sitting in your beautiful garden here in the middle of Inishannon. Now, this wasn't your garden then.
No, it was Uncle Jackie's, my husband's uncle. And Uncle Jackie was a saint. Do you know, they say, if you want to know me, come and live with me. Now, Uncle Jackie lived next door to us, but the two houses opened onto the one garden. And I loved Uncle Jackie. He grew everything that we ate, actually. I think real gardeners grow food. Potatoes, cabbage, rubber, lettuce, raspberries, strawberries, gooseberries, everything. The garden fed us, really. And he'd hens and dogs and cats and our young fellas on tricycles. And it never fazed him or bothered him. And I didn't appreciate it at all because I wasn't a gardener at all. I took it all for granted. When I became a gardener, I looked back at Uncle Jackie and thought, you were a saint to put up with it. But he was a lovely, lovely man. And, you know, he loved his garden. And he, you know, some people turn the gardening into a job. Uncle Jackie never did that. When you came out, he'd lean in his pike and he'd chat to you. He was never in a hurry. So Uncle Jackie died and I inherited the garden. And I was clueless, really. I know nothing about it. I just thought it happened. After a couple of years, I realised it didn't happen. And at the time, the children were small and I was working. And nature can take over awful fast. It became a wilderness. But of course, the lads were playing football in it and there was dogs in it. And I remember one stage, there was a table tennis table in the middle of it. It was pure chaos. But I knew at the back of my head, I thought one day I'll come back. I'd come to the gate and I'd look at the garden and I'd say, "Uncle Jackie, I haven't forgotten you. Someday I will come back and I'll bring your garden right." And I did. I always say I came in the gate with a barrel load of enthusiasm and a barrel load of ignorance. I had no clue. But I had gardening sisters and gardening friends, and I watched all the makeover programs, you know, Monty Dunn and Ellen, which was Ellen Tishmasher at the time, and Helen Dillon. I'm a great Helen Dillon.
She's brilliant.
She's brilliant. And I went around to other gardens and I read up gardening books. What I didn't realise was inside me was a gardener sleeping. Maybe it was a farmer in me. Once I got at it, it became an obsession. Do you know what one of my friends said to me the other day? It was my daughter, actually. She said, "That's your cocaine, you know, yeah." The garden. I just love it.
Yeah. And when Gabriel was alive, of course, your husband, he was where we're sitting now. There wasn't, we can't see any lawn now, but that was a lawn. And he was in charge of the lawn. Is that right?
He was the green man. Yeah. And before I really started gardening, he always maintained the lawns. And then I started gardening and I became very conscious of edges. My God, he said, I was cutting lawn here. I never heard about edges. Now I said, it's all about edging. And we had a demarcation line. He kept outside the edge and I kept inside it, so it worked very well. And we gardened together. And then Gabriel died and I was on my own in the garden, and I thought,
Did it feel the same?
No, I remember I used to come out and sit and I used to think, "Oh my God, I can't do anything." I think grief does that to you. It paralyzes you mentally and physically, and you're mentally damaged, but you're physically exhausted. I used to come out and I really, it would be 4 o'clock in the evening before I could get myself to move. I'd be kind of psyching myself into going, and you wouldn't have the energy, or you wouldn't have the inclination either, because I suppose the garden was a sharing thing. I found it very difficult. I remember there was a blackbird. There's a lot of blackbirds in this garden. I can remember once one of the blackbirds, he'd a bad wing or something, and as a result he became very tame, and he used to often come up quite close, and Gabriel used to feed him, and he was a lovely little creature. Then the blackbird was missing one day, and I searched the garden and I found him above in the grove. One of the cats had got him, and I thought, that's the brutality of life. Now I remember thinking, well, that's what life is like now. Like, you know, something about it made me think, God, life is brutal. Like, but I think the garden, I dug. You see, I had the lawns, and then I acquired two dogs. And they're Dobermans, and you saw them, and they were running around. They turned my lawns into ploughed fields, and I thought, something has to change here. The dogs couldn't go, so the lawns had to go. I was a bit like Oscar Wilde in the news and the wallpaper. So anyway, I redesigned. I sat down and I redesigned the garden. And I must say, I kind of thought, it turned from being a job to a challenge, like the redesigning. First I was thinking, oh my God, my lawns. And then when I got into it, I thought, God, this is going to be great. And I showed it to one of my sons. He said, you can't have a garden without lawns. I said, that's what I'm going to have. And I showed it to a friend, and he said, you know, Alice, you're gardening for two dogs. And he was right. But
did you feel you were betraying Gabriel at all when you did that?
I didn't, because Gabriel was the most tolerant man you would ever meet. Oh. That was the one thing about Gabriel. Whatever I decided to do, he'd say, right, go for it. He never, ever, and funny, my daughter and I were talking about it once, and you know, we would discuss it, and he was the most encouraging person. He never invaded your space. You were total freedom. Mm-hmm. And if you ever got a mad, and I used to get mad notions, he'd never say don't, he'd say go. He always said, you only regret in life what you never did.
Yeah.
So he'd never make you feel that, I thought. So I started at it anyway, and dug it. I remember one night when Gabriel was alive, I was out in the garden, and I was here so late. He was at a meeting and came in, and it was, yeah, this is 12 o'clock. He assumed I was going to bed and locked the back door, and I was pounding the door. He said, what the devil are you doing out there? I was walking around the garden in the dark. But anyway, I dug the garden and transformed it, and I loved doing it, actually. But I think the digging healed me. There's something in the earth that's just absolutely, what, I don't know, I couldn't explain it. But if you come out in the garden kind of not right and be draggled or hurting and go digging, God, an hour after, you're kind of all right. I don't know what happens. Some miracles happens with the earth, you know.
I love the way your head shuts down. You know the way, yes, the connection you had with nature, mm, just because you were living in it, mm, when you were a child. Mm. When you lose that, it's actually harder to maintain your head, do you know what I mean, if you have to deal with sadness. Yeah. Whereas the garden, it's like a workout, isn't it, for your brain?
It is, and it does it without you making any effort. All you need to do is make yourself available. Get out there and start potherawling. Potherawling around the garden. I was outside, what were you doing? I was potherawling. You know, you kind of fall from one job into another, and then you go here, and there's a fella that needs to be propped, and then there's another fella that says, come on, help me. And you know, you're like a night nurse, going around to all the different patients, and you get totally absorbed. And whatever it is, it just heals you. I'm saying now that if I'm ever in bad form, and the world, I always think, do you know, there's a poem, the world was too much with me. Yeah. The world is too much with me. I come out in the garden, and I presume there's no other world out there. There's no other crazy people in this world. I'm the only crazy one in this world here. I have it all to myself.
And it's not just about the plants, even though you love your plants so dearly. This is a garden, your statues, your dogs, the trees that are there for certain people.
Yeah, they are. I love the trees. You know, planting a tree for somebody when they die, it's a lovely thing. Mm-hmm. I'm just inside the gate, I have a tree, Norlean's tree, I call it. Then I have Con's tree, Gabe's tree. And of course, this is Uncle Jackie's tree, the huge apple tree. He planted that himself before he left. So the trees, and I love the different shapes and the different colours. I mean, the pagoda tree and the, you know, the Dinsia. They're all so different, and it's just so important to plant trees. It is so important to plant trees, because my father used to say, it takes a tree 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years to grow, and a fool could cut it in 5 minutes. A fellow, yeah. When I hear the chainsaw, I think, oh my God, who's cutting what? Like,
but the other thing I've noticed, I mean, you've the plants growing everywhere here, even up on the flat roof, even up around your bedroom window. Oh, you've got flowers and plants growing.
Because, like what you say, I envy people whose house is looking out over their garden. I don't have that. So the next best thing is bring the garden as close to me as I can. So I have the flat roof just outside my bedroom window, and I plant it, and I plant sweet peas there. So I come out in the morning and I sniff. I'm like a sniffer dog, and I think smells are so important in a garden. They're kind of they're so uplifting, and I love old stones in a garden and old driftwood. I mean, I have a big lump of driftwood down there. It came from the mouth of the Fail. We were in Ballybunion and the lads were young, and I saw it came in on the tide. I saw it and I couldn't be parted from it, and these were teenagers now at this stage, and I said, come on, and try to talk for teenage young fellas to dragging a big lump of driftwood along the beach in Ballybunion. And of course every other smart young fella was passing smart comments. So we dragged it to the boot of the car, brought it home, and I love it. It becomes my crib at Christmas. And then there's a big old rope there over the rope.
Yeah.
That came in the tide in Ballybunion as well. That's a Kerry rope. Well, it finished up in Kerry. It could have come from anywhere. Came off a boat and it got washed
call it
in
a Kerry rope.
Kerry rope. And I brought that. So in a way, like in the garden, I have a lot of things I've collected. Joseph over there now, he's a Portland stone statue. I wanted Francis. St. Francis, and I gone to the boards, couldn't get a Francis, and I was up in Glencumbra, and Father Jimmy Brown, who runs the show above, I said, Father Jimmy, I'm looking for St. Francis. Haven't got him. He said, would you settle for St. Joseph? So I brought home St. Joseph, and he's lovely. He settles, he's St. Joseph the worker, and he's there in the middle of the garden. And then I have I've only one wise man now. I had two wise men. They were thrown out of the church. They finished up in a skip. There's a lot of stuff here in this garden that came out of skips, because you could rubbishy things that, you know, it's amazing how they blend in. And so I have the wise man out that was thrown out of the crib.
But it's a garden with all of those mementos and with all of these trees and plants. It's a garden that's grown with you from Uncle Jackie's garden.
Yeah.
To you as the young mother here, when you're the young postmistress, and you know, the kids all playing football and the dogs running around, to you and Gabriel together, to you in your despair, and to you here now as the grandmother. It's lovely, isn't it, all those layers of your memories, not just the layers of the planting.
Yeah, that's right. I suppose my whole life is wound into this garden, really. And when I walk around it, I can feel that in the ground. I think, in a way, a farm is like that, that have been gone down through generations. I remember the night my father died, the night of the funeral, actually, my brother and I walked down to the river, and there's something about the land, be it a farm or a garden. There's something about the land. You see, we come and go, but the land and rivers and trees go on forever, you know. So there's a solidity about it, that we're only passing through. So so we need to mind, we are the caretakers, so we need to look after things while we're here to the best way. But I think if you put it into the garden pays it back 100-fold. You know, you get such joy out of a garden. You know,
you surely do. But listen, the rain is coming on now, and I don't want to get you completely soaked, so we'll go in out of the garden. Yeah. And Alice Taylor, it's such a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for showing us your garden.
Thank you.
Wasn't she an absolute pet? I can't tell you how nice that garden was. And actually, if you want to see and hear Alice, she's taking part in the West Cork Literary Festival in Bantry next Monday. Now, the festival runs from tomorrow until this day week, so that's the 6th to the 12th of July. But Alice will be at the Maritime Hotel in Bantry on Monday at 2:30. And she's talking about her most recent book, The Gift of a Garden, which is a lot like that conversation you've just heard there, but beautifully produced as well. And for more information, anyway, West Cork Literary Festival.ie. We've another remarkable woman for you to hear from after the break.